long time.
Less than an hour and a half.
2 hours?
Hi, I'm Jen. I'm an addict alcoholic.
Hi, Jen.
But seriously, the meeting finishes at
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. All right, so I'll make it as long as I want. So it always takes me a minute to get my heart to stop racing, because I get so nervous, and then I finally get up here and realize I'm in front of people, right? Not something to be afraid of. Anyways, so my experience, strength, and hope, right? Keep it simple. Briefly, I have three sisters, and my parents separated when I was like 7 or something. And what else? In my opinion, and how I feel, and what I know about my alcoholism and addiction, is that all of the circumstances in my life didn't make me an alcoholic. You know, I was the chubby one, right? So I got picked on for being chubby. Or big boned was what my mother used to tell me I was. So, you know, everybody has something to deal with when they're young, you know, whether or not it's your redhead or you got freckles or you're chubby or you don't talk to anybody and you don't have any friends, and, you know, the list goes on. But, so the only thing that I do know that I felt as a child, for whatever reason, that might have accentuated or made my drinking more appealing and whatnot, is I was always uncomfortable. And I always, from the earliest time, I remember not feeling like I fit in, honestly, and I don't know why that is. I wasn't, you know, other than being picked on, whatever, there was nothing in my family, in my circumstances at home, that was bad, that made me, that could be a reason for why I felt that way. So I just felt that way. I just didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. In my family, I remember being like 10 or something and really realizing that I'm the only like really big boned of my sisters. I'm the only one with blonde hair and blue eyes, and my parents are both brunettes with brown eyes, so my assumption was I was definitely the milkman baby, because not only was I, you know, the oddball in some way or another, but there were, like, supposedly my baby pictures had been destroyed in a flood that we had. So anyways, that was the big thing, is that I would joke around about being the milkman baby. I just didn't feel like it belonged, point blank. And I was still a really silly person. I still am very silly, but whatever. So anyways, that was me before I discovered baby duck wine, which I regret ever discovering, because I puked it for like 4 hours later, all over myself and my friend's bed, and then somehow ended up in a bathtub because, you know, I was rolling around in my own vomit. It was fantastic. It was a great introduction to my alcoholism, eh? And I had a headache for 2 days. My friend, her parents told my parents that I had food poisoning and decided not to let them know that somehow under their, you know, care or whatever, I got my hands on like three or two bottles of baby duck, let alone their whole liquor cabinet and their tequila and vodka, and mixed it all together because it seemed better to mix it all, because why not? More potent, right? That was the whole thing. Ridiculous. That It just is ridiculous. So, so after that day, looking back on it now, I'm like, it's so clear that I'm an alcoholic, because after being that sick, it was really bad. I'm humiliated, you know, like I knew these people since I was really young, and I was 12, and you know, going through puberty, which I had started, you know, when I was like 7 or something, but it doesn't matter. And you know, so whatever, and I've got my best friends, like younger brothers, bathing me, you know, so it was humiliating because the whole family is involved in trying not to have this person fucking die and have to go to the hospital and get their stomach pumped, you know, and so that's humiliating, let alone painful, right? So you know, any normal person, or at least anyone not like myself, wouldn't have come to the conclusion that I could drink anything but wine. So that was my conclusion. After that period, whenever drink was in my mouth, I never drank for the taste. I'm not an alcoholic who ever appreciated the taste of anything. I put it in my mouth and had it and drank as quickly as possible because I wanted to get numb. And it's not even that. At first, it didn't start off me wanting to get numb. I wanted to become loud and obnoxious and crazy, and I wanted to have an excuse for being that way, right? Which was the fact that I was sloshed. And that's how I drank. I never understood anybody who would. It started off that way at 12. You know, I didn't drink because I would love a glass of wine with my cream sauce and my. Or you know what I mean? Like at 13, I'm not thinking that way. You know, I wanted to have a good time, and for some reason that incorporated booze. So I quickly became like the fastest chugger because I hated the taste of beer, and I would be buying the cheapest beer because I couldn't afford anything else, so I'd have my 40s and I'd drink it as fast as possible. And then that would be great. And I kept doing that, and that the alcohol opened doors to many other things because I was open to anything. You know, I was like, if you could get me to feel comfortable in my skin by giving me something to put in my body, by giving me a substance, by all means, bring it on. I didn't, you know, this is in hindsight, can I look back and realize that that's what I was doing? You know, not all the time, like, yeah, all the time. Because the thing that I can't explain is that it was very fun for a period of time. How long that period of time was, I don't remember, because somewhere between my starting and my hating my life, my drinking and substance abuse went from being recreational and fun to being functional. I needed it to function. And the weirdest twist at this was that I couldn't function with it, right? So that didn't make any sense. It was like the most retarded thing in the world, because at the end of it, you know, at the end of this, you know, what started off as some innocent good time turned into the most painful thing in the world to ever go through. You know, like, I hated my substance abuse. I hated drinking, and I hated smoking a lot of weed. It's a part of my story. And I couldn't stop. I somehow started thinking about the fact that I might have a problem, and I'm very grateful that I had certain people in my life that made me start thinking about my life. My best friend was a prostitute and a crack user. And it's very hard. I don't know if any of you know anybody or have been there, but to deny the fact that this person who is using this substance has a problem is like impossible, right? Because it's so drastic. Like I couldn't understand, and it made me feel really strange to be in a situation where the person who's my best friend, who's normal, one minute, the next minute is crawling on the floor looking for things over there when she was smoking over there. You know, like, it makes no sense. And I think that it started to get the ball rolling. I started to see her addiction. I could see it. It was undeniable. And I hated it. And I loved her. And I wish that she wouldn't be that way. But she was. And somewhere along the line, I really started disliking what I was doing. I couldn't stand going into another dingy bar, hoping that some dingy guy would pick me up, even though, like, I didn't want these dingy guys to be picking me up anyways. So if they didn't try to pick me up, then I would feel like shit. Like, no, it didn't make any sense. Nothing made sense. Like, I would want to do one thing and would not be able to do it. You know, like, I remember so many times sitting on a couch with friends around and not being able to leave the situation I was in, because I was like physically incapable of getting up and leaving and going home or like getting out of this bad situation. I was incapable of doing that. You know, there was no, and the way I look at it now is like, it's very clear to me how much of a allergic reaction this is, and how when I put a substance in my body, my system does not react the same way as other people. I can have great intentions of going to swimming, and because I'm a swimmer, I was a swimmer and now I am in sobriety, but when I was using, I would have great intentions of going swimming and end up at a friend's place with the joint in my mouth and the potential of beer later or whatever. And not go, obviously, because my priorities would shift within a second. Even though, like, deep down I wanted to go, I couldn't. Like, I couldn't. It's just, there's no other way of explaining it. My mind and my logic, or something. It was just weird. It just doesn't make any sense. So I had come to a point after there's so many stories of silliness and ridiculousness, but I'm not going to go into detail. We all have them, you know, and yeah, they're hilarious, but the truth and the reality of my past and of those years was that it came down to this. It came down to me wanting to change so badly, like with every fiber of my being, wanting to not drink, wanting to not pick up the drink, like, and wanting to not grab the next joint that went around, because it wasn't working. I hated the feeling. I hated the feeling. After just one drink, I remember, like, the last thing I was drinking was, I was having Frangelico. It was, like, my new thing to have found. It tastes like chocolate, yeah. And, like, one drink, and I could feel the nervous. I'd get shaky, and I'd start being paranoid, and I'd be so uncomfortable in my skin, and I just want more to like try to numb that, and it wouldn't. It would just get heightened and worse, and I still couldn't stop. I hated the feeling, and the feeling no longer did anything for me. at all, and I couldn't stop. And that's when I knew that I had a problem, you know, because I had no ability to, you know, with the, I had the will, but I had no means. Like, I didn't have the ability to stop. And then my ears opened to my guidance counselor in high school, who I would emotionally dump to every now and then, you know, and tell her about the bad situations I'm in and whatever. Had been telling me for a long time, go to this young people's meeting, go to this, it's AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, blah, blah, go to this meeting and maybe it'll help you. And I hadn't really listened. I didn't want to listen because I didn't think I had a problem and nobody else thought I had a problem. Jeez, my friends were like, Jen, you don't have a problem. Like, it's just pot. Just, you know, they don't say alcohol because alcohol, you know, who has a problem with alcohol? I mean, it's legal and you can buy it whenever you want. So why is there, where's the problem, you know? But the pot smoking was just like so accepted. You know, of course my pothead friends are just like, it's just weed, like you have no problem. And I'm like sitting there like, you obviously don't feel the way I feel right now, and I hate my life and can't do anything about it. Like, yeah, that sounds fucking peach keen. Thanks. Thanks for the vote of confidence with my life, you know, or for knowing me in any way, you know. So I knew I had a problem, and I was willing, and I remember going to my first meeting, and I was so broken down. I didn't have faith in anything. I didn't believe in anything. I had never seen, it had been so long since I had seen any type of positive life that I had lost faith, or I had no belief that it existed. I had been in the dark for so long, you know, like I had been in the dingy, you know, hanging out with pimps and crack dealers and staying up all night and sleeping all day, you know. I was in the dark and didn't believe anymore, or didn't know if there was any truth out there anymore. I thought everybody smoked weed, like everybody. Like if you, like I thought that, you know, people running for city council, you know, people running for mayor, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They were all getting high, and that's just the bottom of it. They're all growing, and I was miserable because I was like, if this is what everybody does and I can't do it and I'm miserable, what am I going to do? I'm going to die. You know, like this doesn't sound like a great life at all, you know? And so, and then I walked into my first meeting of AA, NA, CA, GA. It was a mix. It was a bridge to AA, basically. And it was a group of women and some men. It was a very small meeting. There was like maybe at best 5 members of AA. And at worst 2. And when I went, I think there was 3 women. And it was a beautiful experience. I was very aware that day that I had been shown, that I had been given the opportunity to live, to have a life. And I had been shown that that there was such a thing as sober people, or that there was such a thing as living without using, and I had no idea there was such a thing, right? So being able to see these 3 women who were laughing and joking with each other, and they had this like air of amazingness, like it was so attractive. They made me want to get sober. I had wanted to get sober. They made it evident that it was possible. I didn't know how yet, you know, like I wasn't, you know, I sat there and it was a speaker meeting, a speaker discussion. And I sat there and I listened to my future sponsor share her story. And it was like so like parallel to mine. It was unbelievable. And she was smiling and she had tons of gaps in her teeth like me. And I was like, this woman even looks like me and she talks like me and she's clean and happy looking and it was just unbelievable. I was like, what the? And so she shared her story, her experience, strength of hope. And it was my first meeting, and I'm a talker, right? Even when I was messed up, like, I was analyzing things, you know? And so, like, after she shared, I shared my whole story, you know? Like, I didn't know, and I kind of just rambled for, like, I felt so comfortable. I felt very at home with these people, and I sat there and I was like, you know, yeah, I'm all messed up and I don't know what's going on and I hate myself and you guys look happy. And I was like, I have three sisters, and I went into that like in great depths, you know, like I was picked on for being fat and it hurt and it was horrible and like I don't know what I'm doing with my life, and I was very confused and and really had the need to vocalize it. And I'm very, very grateful that I'm not shy or in that way, or I know that it's got to come out sometime, and because I never had a problem speaking how I felt most of the time. Like now I've learned a little bit about myself and I don't always like to share what's going on. But when I first came in, I was so confused, and I was just, like, so happy. I was on a pink cloud for so long. It was 6 months. 6 months. I remember, and it was so pink. I wanted everyone to be wearing the same sunglasses, you know? I was like, listen, you have never been to an AA meeting. What is wrong? You need to come and get this thing called alcoholism. And you need to come and meet these people on the program, and it's beautiful, and God's in my life, and I'm spiritual, and I am watching the sunsets, and have you seen the moon last night? I was like, oh, I was touched, yeah, like I was very lifted, I don't know, I was like smiling at everybody, you know? And if they didn't smile back, well, that's all right. Anyways, it was really, I was really on a pink cloud, seriously. And I had got a sponsor, like, quickly when I came in. I asked the woman who I had first heard speak be my sponsor, and she said yes. And didn't really start working the steps. I was working them, you know, intellectually. I was really spiritual on this pink cloud. And then, like, I literally 6 months later, I was, like, kicked off of the pink cloud. You know, my spirit guide or something was like, you've had enough of this good time called not reality or something. Or, like, you need a reality check. And I was, like, kicked off the cloud and landed flat into this thing called life, right? And what got me kicked off the cloud was a behavior that hadn't changed, right? Because I thought, you know, my problem is the drinking and the drugs. You know, I don't think that, like, I knew I was messed up inside, like, with my self-esteem, and I was so insecure, and I had no confidence and no self-worth, and I knew those things, but I didn't think, you know, that they would ever be fixed other than by being loved by other people or something weird. I don't know. I never really thought that there were actions that I was doing that were not such a good thing to be doing, right? So 6 months in, I was in a situation where I was avoiding myself And I realized that I can't run. I cannot be dishonest with myself. Like what would I say? I remember the night where, like, I had been with this guy who I had known for years, and I was just using him for attention, and didn't like him at all, but wanted attention, right? And I remember bumping into a friend who I used to use with, and I was waiting for the bus, and I was like, nothing works anymore, you know? Like, I can't get out of myself. I can't go and get drunk and obliviated when I'm feeling pain or when I'm frustrated and angry. I hate smoking cigarettes and I want to quit because it sucks and I hate it. I was like, I can't just sleep with people because that's not the person I am and I don't enjoy it and I can't get out of myself. I'm like, there's nothing that works. You know, and I was pissed. I was very angry to be 18 years old and very unhappy. And my unhappiness was of my own making. And that's when I realized that. And that was my reality check, was like, oh, Jen, this is your behavior that's making you unhappy in some way or another. You know, like, congratulations on not changing that one behavior there. And along with many others that I figured out later on. So right, 6 months in, realized that I had reality check and that I had all these feelings and I was angry and all these things I was feeling, basically. Because when I was using, my spectrum of feelings were messed up, wanting to get messed up. Like, that's like how deep it got, you know? Like, and depressed. There, like, depressed, wanting to get messed up, being messed up, and maybe some silliness. You know, there was no anger, there was no frustration, there was no pain. I didn't let myself feel any pain. I didn't let myself feel any true happiness. I didn't let myself, I had no feeling of, I don't know, so many things. And so after being in the program for 6 months and realizing that I need to learn how to cope with these things called emotions and whatever, it was really tough. Because I didn't know what they were, I didn't know where they were coming from, I didn't know, half of the time I'd get pissed off, and I didn't know why I was so pissed off, and people would just say, the women in the program would just say, like, like, they would listen, and they would just kind of, like, and I remember being, like, so, like, my heart always goes into everything, eh, and I remember being so, like, I don't understand, like, I'm so pissed off one minute, and I feel broken. That was the thing. I felt so broken, and I wanted you to fix me. I didn't want to be responsible for my own life. I didn't. And so I just didn't have the ability. I was just getting detoxed, you know? Like, I was still getting off of this stuff, and then all these feelings are coming up, and I'm confused, and I don't even know who I am. I don't even know what my favorite color is. I don't even know, you know, like, all of these things. Like, if I didn't know what I believed in, I didn't know what I wanted to do as a career. I didn't know what I liked to do. I didn't know what I didn't like to do. I didn't know how I wanted to dress. I didn't know, like, what kind of music I really liked. Like, I was so confused about me, about who I was, because I never got to know me. You know, I was 13 and decided, nope, you're not good. I don't want to be you. I want to be numb. You know, like, I don't want to feel. I want to go with the crowd of people who don't want to know anything, you know? Like, so, in sobriety, that was, you know, that's a tough pill to swallow, I don't know if that's like appropriate. Well, yeah. You know, that is serious stuff. You know, like this isn't. They say in the Big Book, I think, or somewhere. You know, I've heard that. Just drew a blank. Anyways. Yeah, that this is a spiritual kindergarten, right? Kindergarten is not easy, okay? Like, wasn't kindergarten easy at one point? Like, where you got to color and, like, build blocks? There's no block building. It's like tearing down everything you ever believed was true and starting from scratch, you know? And that is hard, and that takes, like, so much courage and will and, like, want and action, you know? And that's, you know, I'm looking back, and it being my anniversary on the 11th of March, I'm so grateful that my bottom was my bottom, and that things in my sobriety have changed, like, so much. I know so much more about myself and want to know more about myself and other people and life and how things work and how it's so strange how there's all these coincidences sometimes and how, you know, like, I want to learn all these things, and I am, and I've learned so much about myself, and it's so much has changed. My mother is like one of my best friends on this journey. We're on this path of growth and knowledge or something, and she's right there with me, and we're generations apart, and it feels like I'm talking to my sister. And my mother used to be the one that I would apologize through my, you know, I would apologize to every night, like, I don't mean to hurt you, but I keep leaving the house for 3 days and never calling you, you know? And she's one of my most beautiful people in my life ever. That relationship is beautiful. My relationship with my family is amazing now, and I'm very grateful because I know not so many people, or depending on everybody's circumstances are different, and I'm very fortunate to be so close with my mother and my family, and to have such, I'm very blessed. And that has all changed, but what hasn't changed, and I had to learn this in sobriety, I had to come close to going back out to be reminded that not that it's a daily program, but that, because I knew it was a daily program, but that the same, like, affirmation, the same, like, affirmative action I took that first time I came in, like, that first day I came in, needed to stay there on a daily basis. You know, like, if my boundaries started to be crossed, like, if I would start letting my sisters smoke joints next to me, or watch people do shots. I can't watch people do shots. I can't. And if I was starting to let those things be cool, that's cool. You can go ahead and smoke a joint right next to me. That's fine. It's not bothering me. That's not cool, man. Because when I first came in, and to this day, today, luckily, I'm very afraid of that thing I can't control, that thing I have no power over, that thing that killed me, that brought me to my knees faster than anything. You know, like, with all the 24s or whatever, that has not changed. I need to keep my boundaries. I need to keep coming to meetings. I need to keep having a sponsor. I need to be active in my programs. You know, like, I'm not perfect, and I'm not some, like, I don't know, not perfect, and whatever, but it's important for me to maintain my spirituality And whatever that means to you, I don't know. What it means to me is that I'm honest with myself and love myself anyways. And so I keep going back, and it's a beautiful thing. It's such a blessing to be sober. And I don't think it took 4 years for me to be truly grateful to be clean and to be sober and to be able to see my potential now that I'm not in self-destruct mode, you know, now that I'm not in kill myself and hate the world mode, you know. It's a blessing, and I'm very grateful for it for the first time. And I was grateful in the past, but I wanted what you guys had, and I kept on doing what you would tell me because I had faith that something good was going to come out of something, right? And now the truth is, in my life, so much positive has come out of this program of action, you know? And I can finally quote from the Big Book. On page 150 of chapter 10, to the employers, it says that, I don't think I can quote it exactly, but we've been saved from a living death. And I can relate so much to that. And I'm so grateful that I've been saved. And I'm currently being saved by the fellowship and by this program. It's still hard for me to understand or try to describe how much of it is my action, how much of it is spirit, how much of it is people around me. I don't understand. I can't even begin to try to understand. I don't even know. But one thing that I have done since the beginning, and I kept doing it and was reminded that I need to keep doing it, is coming to meetings, being active, reaching out when I don't want to, right? Talking and saying, hi, I'm Jen, to the newcomer, even though I really sometimes don't want to, I do it anyways. You know, calling my sponsor, getting things off of my chest right away when they need to be talked about, I talk about them. I work my steps. I go through it. I sit down and talk about the program with my sponsor. You know, talk about spirituality. Talk about something, you know, with substance sometimes. And sometimes not, you know. I have a good time in my sobriety. I am a silly person. And I like to be a silly person. And nobody is going to make me not be a silly person. Ever. Because silliness is the best thing. And I try not to take myself too seriously a lot of the time. Because when I'm taking myself too seriously, things aren't fun anymore. And it's just not fun. So I'd like to think that I'm here to have fun and to be silly. I'm a responsible person. And I take responsibility for my life now. Which is unbelievable, you know? Like, I don't want anybody to fix my life, because my life, it's my life, and I'm going to, with the help of God and direction and the people who love me, take responsibility for my shitty job that I have to work and all those things and paying bills and doing this and doing that and enjoying it, which is strange. You know, because I, at one point, really hated my job, really hated being a cashier and being paid if you don't know me, that's my expression for not very much, not getting paid very much, and hating my job, and hating being in consumers. Anyways, today was a great day. Today I love my job, I love my family, I love myself. I'm very happy right now. And I think that that's what it comes down to, right? It's today. It's not tomorrow or yesterday, and it's today, and nothing in the future or in the past is going to make me happy, right? It's if I want to find happiness, it's going to be in the moment. Because I can think that my career is going to make me happy. I can think that, you know, this perfect relationship is going to make me happy. Or that if I lose 20 pounds, I'll be happy. Or if I win the lottery, I'll be happy. But you know what? Maybe I won't get there, you know? And then I'll be like, oh shit. I had time to be happy and I wasn't. Or I don't know. Anyways, I'm going to stop and thank you guys very much for my sobriety. Thank you.